Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I woke this morning to a bunch of notifications on my iPad from Mike Hurley saying, first there was a URL to a tweet that doesn't show up in the notification center. So sure. I'm like, all right. And then why is Mike sending this to me? And then the next one above it, because it's reverse chronological, is like, I guess we have a subject for the podcast next week, and the next one after that is we should probably record on Tuesday instead of Monday the week after that. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what? And then
do you
always,
do you ever worry when you wake up that's like some terrible event has
so
happened?
Let me tell you, I have two stories there, and then I'll get back to my little thing. One is when Steve Jobs was alive. Every morning I would be like, I wonder if Steve Jobs died, because we knew it was coming, and right. I had that moment of like, when's it going to hit? Where am I going to be? How am I going to be prepared? And what if it's the middle of the night? The other thing is I used to wake up to back in the turn of the century. I used to wake up to the radio. I had the radio go on, and it was like news radio or sports radio, but it was like the radio would go on at like 7 a.m. and then I'd roll out of bed. And on September 11, 2001, the radio came on, and the first thing I heard was a newscaster saying, and we have confirmation that the second World Trade Center tower has collapsed. And I was like, okay, I'm awake now.
Right.
And that gave me that moment of like, geez, I guess I need to, like, that's what you, I don't wake up to the news anymore. I don't.
Yeah. I used to for a while when I was like, when I had to be at a desk at a time, I also tended to wake up to like NPR basically.
Yeah.
And there were some mornings that you would wake up and you could just tell by the tone of the newscaster's voices.
Oh no,
like,
something terrible
has happened.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't miss
now
that, certainly.
Now we get,
but I do wake up to the flurry of text messages,
yeah,
though.
Now we get push notifications. That's the thing. Like, right, I remember, like, I was walking the dog, and my Apple Watch buzzed, and I looked down, and it was like, Carrie Fisher died. Like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Right.
And I thought to myself, oh, it's very sad that somebody died, but also there is not, some... I've started to gird myself. I'm not like lessening the death of Carrie Fisher, because I remember that moment, but I remember also thinking like that it followed a string of other really, really, really terrible for the world kind of push alerts from newspapers.
Right.
And it's like, oh boy, like I turned them off. I actually turned the news push notifications off for a while, and I have some of them on now on some devices, but I got tired of having my watch tap me and be like, hey buddy, something awful happened. Yeah, hey, did you know?
Yeah,
something awful happened. I'm like, oh, God.
Because I'm lazy, I haven't turned off the New York Times one, fine, whatever. But at some point, Apple News started sending me Washington Post alerts. And then at some point, I launched the NPR app, and it also started sending me push notifications.
Oh, yeah.
So now when there's one news story, I get three messages. It's like, all right, something.
Yeah, I turned off. I think I might have the New York Times now, but I turned off the Washington Post. I turned off Apple News. So my point is that then I tapped through, and what I saw was that Apple announced a media event, which I had guessed from the fact that Mike was saying, oh, we get to do a draft next week, right? Like, all right, okay, I get that. I guess that March event that we talked about possibly happening will happen. And then I saw the tweet that he had linked, which was to somebody who had posted the image and said, wow, it's the first time Apple's held an event in Chicago. I was like, what? And
shoes on the other foot now.
Yeah,
Snell.
Yeah, this is literally the first time I am traveling on a plane to an Apple event, because before I even changed out of my pajamas, I had bought plane tickets in a hotel room and done all the logistical stuff to go to this event. They did an event in New York for iBooks and things. It seems very similar to what they're going to probably do
there.
This time.
I was at that event 5-6 years ago.
I think
6 years ago.
That may be the only official Apple media event that I have missed since like 97 or something, 98. I think it might be.
They've done, I mean, they once upon a time did stuff at Macworld Expo in Boston. That is sort of going back well into the 90s at this point, early 90s.
I went the last Macworld Expo Boston that they attended was 97. And I did miss that one. I didn't go to that one. I just, my magazine had just shut down and they'd brought us along and they're like, oh, you could go and wait in a long line to go see this Apple keynote. I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. And of course that was when Steve Jobs had Bill Gates come up on the big screen, Big Brother and all that. And I didn't go to that one, but that is, in fact, I would say that and the iMac launch event, which I did not attend, I think is basically the last serious Apple media event that I've missed. There might be like an Apple Expo Paris or something, but those were not generally big Apple events.
Yeah. Every time they would talk at like one of the industry keynote, you'd see them at like every once in a while at like NAB or something.
Yeah, and
like
I would
that.
Never go to NAB or NAM or something like that, and they would occasionally make an announcement there, but it wasn't the same. I mean, like the CEO is coming on stage to announce a product. But anyway, I'm flying to Chicago, so it's the shoe is on the other foot, because this is a thing that, you know, that most people who don't live in the Bay Area, which is actually most of the people I know and work with, don't live here. I'm the one when WWDC happens where they're like, hey, we're all coming out to the Bay Area, and I'm like, yeah, I'll drive there. So this time, yeah, so Apple's doing an event in Chicago. It's at a high school. It's at a public high school that's apparently like a tech focused high school, so you know the fix is in there. I think I know what we're gonna do. And they've got a really big auditorium that seats like a couple thousand people. Perhaps an Apple media event could be there, and that's all happening on Tuesday the 27th, so a week and a half. So my plane ticket was way more expensive than it would have been if they had given us more notice, but yeah, oh well.
A week and a half is pretty generous notice these days, too.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's down to about a week usually.
Yeah,
you don't have to travel.
That's the limit.
I mean, speaking as someone who in the past had to make a bunch of last minute, you know, travel arrangements pretty much every time an Apple event came up, it is inconvenient and it is expensive. It's nice when, you know, back in the day we had a company to pay for it.
Yeah.
But... But yeah, that was always I would always be sitting there like looking at flights immediately and trying to figure out like, okay, should I be buying these? And I don't know what you're doing, but like, you know, I do remember that it was the 4S iPhone 4S event, I think. And that was the one where I booked my shortest turnaround ever, where I flew out on like Monday. The event was on Tuesday and I flew out Wednesday morning. So, like, I was there for maybe 32 hours or something like that. And, of course, that you mentioned the Steve Jobs thing. And of course, Steve Jobs died while I was on my flight back. So, when none of us were expecting it, because we were all distracted with other things. But, yeah, it's interesting traveling for an Apple event, I will say, since they've never done one in my town.
Yeah, other than those Macworld Expos, but that was back before your time.
Well, before I was still in high school or college at that point, probably.
I don't hear about
that's right.
Yep. I just was in Chicago, which is also really funny because I was there for release notes last fall.
Yep.
So I'm going back, I've been to Chicago a handful of times, and it's nice, and I know I know the airports, and I know the L. I know how to go where I need to go. I made a hotel reservation that's near a train station, so I can, you know, I can handle all of that. I know people there. We actually recorded Dubai Friday in the Cards Against Humanity Chicago podcast co-op studio space when I was there the last time. They fed us pizza, and that's where we're going to do Upgrade in, you know, on that day, is that I talked to Alex Cox at Cards Against Humanity, and she reserved one of their studios for me, so I can go in there and Skype with Mike and do it in a quiet setting, and I'll, you know, you can just take Lyfts or Ubers around Chicago, and then I've got the whole day, because I'm coming in the night before and then popping up the next morning and going to the thing, and then my flight back is that night. It's a direct flight from Midway Airport to Oakland on Southwest Airlines. So, yep. Dr. Drang, if you're out there, does this mean that I can have a hot dog at Midway Airport? Yes, it does. That's what it means. Dr. Drang and I have only met in person one time, but we share anecdotes about passing through the Midway airport because he does that too. And that's, I think he and I both fly Southwest almost everywhere.
I have flown Southwest to Midway. Yep. A couple times.
It's actually good. Great. It's a direct flight from Oakland. It's super easy. And O'Hare is,
it's a pain.
O'Hare
it's
a pain. Is, I have been in O'Hare many times and it is,
there are some of us who still feel like we're in O'Hare. I mean, you've been there once. You feel like maybe you never left.
That's the stress. Is like to reduce the stress of going through those long transfer tunnels. United Airlines put in like a neon light show that plays Rhapsody in Blue, and all it has done is make me on edge when I hear Rhapsody in Blue now, because it's
George
so
Gershwin
stressful
turning over in his grave
to transfer in the airport there.
You know, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that you were in Chicago not that long ago, because in the last two days, I have booked two separate trips to San Jose, two months apart.
Yes, you get to go to San Jose, the gem of the South Bay, twice because of WWDC, and the Science Fiction Worldcon is there in August. So,
yep. So, just made plans to do both of those within the last two. Like literally, I think on Wednesday I booked all my, or whenever they announced WWDC, I booked all my WWDC stuff, and then the next day I was like, I should really get off my butt about this Worldcon stuff because they're like the Airbnbs are going to start going away. So I did that like the next day, and it's like I have spent a lot of money on flights to the same place.
San Jose is far enough that I actually did a hotel last year and am going to do a hotel again this year. That's far enough that for the first couple of days, because those are long days and all that. So it is sort of travel, business travel a little bit for me down in San Jose. But yeah, you get to visit, as our friend Scott McNulty, who visited San Jose once, and I had dinner with him down there, and he said, I don't ever need to be here again. It's like, we kid San Jose. San Jose's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. It's a nice town.
It's not necessarily the place that you would choose to come twice in 3 months for different conventions, but
yeah,
that's the way the cards have been dealt for you. I'm excited because that means Worldcon is going to be drivable for me, which is cool, because I've gone to the World Cons in Reno and we drove, and Spokane I flew, and then now I'll drive down to San Jose. That'll be cool.
Yeah. So San Jose bound.
San Jose, and I will be going to Chicago in late March.
It's a nice time to visit.
It could be.
It's probably not that great.
Could be not great. Sometimes
two years ago,
it gets cold.
I went to a wedding there in July. And I thought to myself, it's July. It's lovely in Boston in July. I'll pack my suitcase, pack my suitcase, get to Chicago. It is rainy and cold, and I was there for a wedding, and I discover I have packed no long pants except for my suit. And as it turned out, it was like, 50 degrees and raining, which is pretty chilly short weather, I think. So that was not the best trip as far as, I don't know why. I didn't really like look at the weather forecast. I just made that logical leap in my head that it is summer, therefore I should be able to wear shorts. That turned out to be wrong. So, pro tip, always check the forecast.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it'll be a thing. Now, I don't know what's funny. I will say this. I don't remember seeing any rumors about this event.
Specifically education is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I saw rumors about products in the pipeline, but I didn't even see Apple's going to do an event in March rumor. Was there one of those? I mean, I know they did one in the past.
There was talk. But it wasn't like based on anything.
That's just it. I don't remember seeing anything that said our sources say Apple's doing an event in March.
No,
it was more like,
they
did one last year, maybe again, and that is not a report, right? And yet here it is.
Yeah.
Maybe that they're using either their own venues or venues in places that are not anywhere near the Bay Area, that the regular sources are harder to come by.
I felt confident that there might not be an event, but I felt confident that there would be announcements, because if you go back the last several years, there's always something in March, and it's not always something that merits an event.
Right.
But there's always something.
So if I had to guess, I would guess that, we're going to get, obviously, education is going to be a focus. They're having us come to a public school in Chicago to do this. They did that one in New York where they talked about how iBooks was going to revolutionize everything, which didn't happen. But so the question is, like, what gets announced in the event and also around the event? This is actually going to be part of my draft with Mike. Is, like, I'm not entirely convinced that I think they may announce a bunch of stuff on that date that aren't in the presentation, right?
I agree.
They'll be like, oh, and also there's a new iPhone SE, but they're not going to talk about that because they're going to focus on education, which is, you know, the speculation that seems pretty reasonable is update to the cheap iPad, maybe adding Apple Pencil support, maybe there's a new Apple Pencil. Maybe there's that update to the MacBook Air that had been rumored, or a price break or something like that. Maybe an update to the MacBook, because that's another product that they kind of push toward students anyway. Like, there are products that they can fit in that story. And then there are probably other products that they'll be like, also, these products came out.
Here's the thing, though, too, is I got to feel like part of this is software oriented. And as we know, like, you know, they haven't been great at keeping all their software stuff under wraps in the last year. There have been a lot of leaks, and there's a lot of lead up time here. So now who knows what people might find. But it strikes me as thinking, like, because their invitation specifically said, like, you know, new solutions for, you know, teachers and students. Like, I have to believe there is some sort of software component for this. And, you know, I saw Fraser Spears, obviously, who is that, like, education is his business. And he talked a little bit about, like, some improvements that could be made for the classroom setups. I would bet good money that there's something in there about, you know, improvements for the software aimed at education. I would also not bet against some sort of improvements, because they've stressed so much, you know, basically teaching programming skills. That there's something around, maybe major update to Swift Playgrounds or something of that ilk. I would not be, especially because, again, like you said, it's a tech-focused high school, right? Like, that seems like a pretty good conjecture. But yeah, it's interesting, because the education events end up being, I mean, that January one in 2012 was a weird hodgepodge of things. It was also in the Guggenheim, which is a weird place to have an event. even focus on education and the iBooks thing. I there has been some talk of maybe, you know, especially because they've gone back and forth on renaming iBooks in the iOS betas. Part of me wonders, and there was some rumor a few months ago about them, like, overhauling their eBooks pro, like, setup.
Right.
So I would not be surprised to see some changes to iBooks be announced there, or Apple Books, or whatever they're calling it now.
Right.
Probably coinciding with maybe, you know, iOS 11.3 finally getting released, maybe as part of that, or maybe just something that happens around that time.
Well, and there are things that we don't expect that could be in there in terms of the books announcement, of, like, saying, we've got this, you know, we got a way for you to clip, for teachers to easily clip articles and put them in a class reader, or, like, stuff that where it's just sort of like services that are happening or apps that are happening that we don't know anything about, that a little group is working on, that they're going to make kind of part of the story. Because I always want to tell a story. There, you mentioned Apple Classroom, right? Like, that has been around for a little while, but they might mention, and it doesn't happen in sync with iOS, so it could be an iOS 11.3 kind of thing. There is that report from 9to5Mac about how iOS 11.3 betas have this new framework called ClassKit, which is all about educational apps. So there's probably... all of these things are kind of in there. Maybe updates to iTunes U, which is what Fraser Spears wants.
Right.
Along with a low-cost iPad that actually supports the Pencil, which I think education really, really wants. It'll be interesting to see if Apple goes there and says, yes, okay. It's no longer an iPad Pro feature to have the Pencil. All iPads now can use the Pencil. That would be probably a good move for them. So they'll tell that story. I think it's interesting, because they will weave all that stuff together and try to tell a coherent narrative about it. And then there's, like, what is the Mac story? Is there a Mac story there? Do they talk about the MacBook Air and how people love it in education and how it's great and they're going to do something to it? I think that's an open question of, like, is this really an iPad focused event? And then the MacBook Air also is present, or will it be part of the story? Is the Mac still part of Apple's message, its sale to education? And then the other question is just, what else gets dropped that day? And I think, you know, we could make a list of, like, iPhone SE, that might be a good time to do it. AirPower Mat, yeah, is supposed
the
to come
charging
out.
Charging case for the AirPods.
Right? Yeah. There's all sorts of other kind of stuff that's just hanging out there as eventually going to be released this year. Maybe they just, they
pile
don't have
it
to
on,
do it
yeah.
the day of the event, but they usually do it the day of the event.
Because it just, it's a convenient way to control the
yeah, and everybody's talking
today.
About Apple stuff that day so that they can say, oh, and Apple also announced this, and Apple also announced that. And they're meeting with people in the press, and it allows them to do that. Like, it wouldn't be, even if they never mentioned on stage, if I had a briefing afterward, they might be like, oh, yeah, and here's the new AirPower mat. Check it out.
Sure, right.
And that's an opportunity to get that in front of me as a member of the press or in a hands-on area or something, even if it's not part of the base message. They can do that if they want to.
Yeah so it's I mean, this is the off season for Apple in some ways, right? Like, they usually, the announcements that they make during March tend to be on the smaller side, right? It's not WWDC, it's not the September event, so I don't think anybody's expecting anything huge. But, you know, the revamps to the iPad and revamps potentially to a MacBook or MacBook Air or what have you could be interesting. I was laughing this morning because as I was writing about this, my battery in my MacBook Air like popped up like a service battery request.
Oh, no.
So I was being like, yep, Apple, it turned on the kill switch. So I'll have to go buy a new MacBook Air.
You know, I think I told this story somewhere. My son has my old 11-inch Air. I've got a more recent 11-inch Air than that. And he came out one day and was like, my keyboard is funny. And I looked at it and it was like starting to bend. And I thought, oh no. And I immediately got out the screwdriver and popped off the bottom. And one of the battery modules was puffed up like a pillow.
Yeah.
And I pulled it out and I got a replacement from iFixit. And it's fine. Now he's got a new battery.
I may have to do that.
It's surprisingly easy.
I've replaced the SSD in this thing a couple times. So, like, I've got the tools for it. It's just one of those things where it's like, all right, now I have to commit to fixing this. Because I'm probably not going to buy a new MacBook Air.
Yeah. But. Oh, no. Right. I mean, my 11-inch, I mean, we talked about this last week, 2 weeks ago. Like, you were using Logic on the MacBook Air, and it's like, it's great. Like, so I wrote the story for Macworld that is basically like, MacBook Air, why won't it die? Which some people have misinterpreted as like, I want it to die. But that's not I'm literally saying, why won't it die? And this is one of the reasons, right? Like, you and I have these old MacBook Airs. They're fine. And that's the challenge is, yeah, it's kind of a bummer that they don't have Retina, but they're fine. They're fast. The SSD is fast. Like, I'm not doing super, like, if I did a denoising pass using my denoising stuff on it, or saving out a huge file, I would moan because it would take forever, right? But I don't generally do that. And, you know, for just editing audio or whatever, it's plenty of computer for that. So why would I take the computer that I've got in hand and spend more than I spent for this one or comparable for this new one when this one works just fine? I think it's harder when you make a good product that lasts and that fulfills all your needs, then it's harder to convince your customers to buy a new one.
Yeah. Yeah, so it will be interesting, especially because even if there's like, you know, there's an argument that those are the low end of the Apple's laptop spectrum, right? Like, in terms of refreshing these things or new models or what have you. But like, education needs are often even kind of like a step below kind of what Apple considers its like introductory model or its entry level model. Because, you know, in the past, they've had configurations which have been built specifically for education. In the past, they've had whole computers, right? Like, they had the eMac back in the day, which was essentially an iMac sort of that was built for education because it's a lower price point and it had lower specs for some stuff. So, you know, the things that education gets excited about are not necessarily the things that a consumer would get excited about. Which is an interesting dichotomy because, you know, people might be like, yeah, I want a cheaper iPad. It's like, yeah, all right, you can have a cheaper iPad, but it may not have the specs or the features that you're expecting from an iPad.
Right.
Because we're trying to price it low so that schools will buy a bunch of them. And that's not necessarily what consumers are always looking for in terms of their, like, performance to money ratio. So the stuff, you know, some of the stuff that get announced here, it's a kind of a question of whether it will be applicable to a broad consumer market or whether they are really targeting education stuff. I don't know. I mean, it could go either way.
Yeah. Yeah. And people will take with them what they want from it. Like, Apple gets the chance to spin the story in their way, but we all are going to walk away with the pieces that interest us and the pieces that don't interest us. And that's just, you right. know, they get their shot and then we all walk away and we may say this books thing is dumb, but this iPad thing is great or whatever. But, and everybody's going to walk away with their own take. Cause yeah, for a lot of people, including our listeners, a lot of people are like, that iPad is irrelevant to me. But for other people, it is the most relevant by far sure. iPad. Like, my son's got a 1-to-1 middle school now, and he's on a Mac. He's on an iPad Air 2, I want to say, is what they hand out. But, you know, very obviously, if they were putting that program in today, or when they turn them over, that's what they're going to get, is they're going to get that iPad, the low-end iPad. And it's super relevant for that market. So it really just depends on what you care about.
Yeah, exactly.
Chicago. All right. Surprise. Hey, it's a trip to Chicago.
You know, you get to break up that monotony of working in your home office just a little bit.
I like my home. I like my office.
But this will make you appreciate it so much more.
I see. I see. Yes, that's right.
I will say, when I was in Seattle, I was working in my friend's house, and I was sitting in their like den downstairs. They have one of those gas fireplaces, and it was kind of chilly in Seattle in the morning. So I'd flip on the fireplace and sit by the fireplace and write and whatever. And I was like, this is actually really pleasant. I came home and I was like, I kind of miss having the gas fireplace. That's a really nice place to work. Oh, well, back to the space heater. It's not quite the same.
Yeah, well, there's that, too. I think... it can go both ways. This is true. Anything else going on? I feel like that this is the thing. This is
This is going to be the thing we're talking about for the next week and a half, I guess.
I suspect it is. It's fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've been waiting for something to happen. Something is going to happen of some variety. So
something.
That'll give us something to talk about, something to write about, which is always nice, because you and I have both definitely been in the positions of being like,
oh, yeah.
It's early March. What am I gonna write about?
Yeah, no kidding. I did do the my keyboard story for Macworld, which was fun. I talked about it a lot on Upgrade, so I'm not going to rehash it. But that was a fun story to do, because it was literally trying to imagine where's Apple going with its keyboard innovation. And again, this is the kind of story you write when there's nothing going on. It's like, yep. Let's just imagine things from the future. But I'm really happy with how that story turned out, because I got to make a few logical leaps and realize that I kind of am a believer now. Not that I would like it, but that Apple could totally do it and is probably trying to do it, which is, you know, it being, what if Apple believes the future of a laptop is to replace the keyboard with a touchscreen?
I was impressed by your conjecture over, like, what if wherever you put your hand down is the right place to be. Like, that to me makes a lot of sense,
right?
In a very Apple-y way.
There's that moment where you're like, oh, you know, like, if the problem is that when I put my hands down, I have to look down to see where the keys are because I can't feel. You know, we already have the tech that can look at your hands and go, I see where your hands are, and put the keys under them, because it's a touch screen, right? And so that's they could totally do that.
it gives me a fascinating, like, I feel like in some ways that would have to be like an expert mode, because if you're learning to touch type something like that,
well,
that's got to be a nightmare.
You're not going to learn to touch type on a touch screen, right? How could you even do that? But you throw that in there, and somebody sent me a link that, like, apparently Braille text input on the iPhone is like that, in the sense that you take six fingers and you put them on the screen and swipe, and it uses that as like the calibration for where your fingers are, and then you start to go. So there are ways that, even without a camera, where you could like position and do a gesture and say, here's where my hands are. The other problem with it, and the touch bar kept on being my example, because the touch bar is interesting, but you have to look at it. Your fingers can't orient unless you are basically looking at it to find it out. You can't feel for it. This is like the classic iPod, third generation, where it had those touch buttons, and you literally couldn't feel for which button it was, because the act of feeling set off the touch sensitivity.
Right.
So I throw all that in there and I think, well, you know, you can look and see where the hands are and adapt the keyboard underneath the hands. You can use the Taptic Engine or something like it to provide feedback, like on my trackpad. My Magic Trackpad in like Final Cut and Logic, it has the option to, like, as you're dragging things around, and even like iWork, dragging things around, it gives you like little little bumps as you move things to the right place. They could absolutely do that on the keyboard to give you like feedback about where your hands are. And then as for the accidental touch thing, like 3D touch is a thing worth thinking about, which is just, they don't, it doesn't have to be, if you have pressure sensitivity, the initial touch doesn't have to set off an interaction. In certain modes, it could do nothing or just orient. Like, it could be feeling for your fingers and know that's where your fingers are without even using a camera. And then you start to press, and now you're in typing mode. Like, they have the tech.
I have super big questions about that in terms of ergonomics.
This is why,
too,
if you're
right?
at Apple,
like, that's the.
If you're at Apple, what you do is you build this. And you try it out, and you're like, oh no, like that. And it may be that there's somebody deep inside an interface lab and like input device lab at Apple who saw that story and is like, yeah, tried that. And then that one worked. That one doesn't work. We tried this other way and that worked here, but that's product development, right? But the tech, I look at it and I think the tech seems to all be there. Like, if Apple could do this, they could make something that's not just a giant touch bar, but something that is. Because Apple knows that that these are issues, and that just dropping a touchscreen keyboard on the bottom of a laptop or an iPad, for that matter, as a second screen, although it has a lot of advantages, all the same advantages that are the reason the iPhone didn't ship with a keyboard, it also has all these disadvantages that would need to be solved. But like, I think they know that, and I imagine that they're thinking about ways to solve them, and they do seem to have the tech that might mitigate a lot of these issues. I'm not saying I would like it, but it might be more usable for a lot of people, and the benefits of having another big touch surface, because you could use it for other things too, right?
Right.
Might outweigh at that point the limitations of it over a physical keyboard. And that's really what you want to do, is you want to mitigate it enough so that now it's like, it's better than the alternative, even if it's different and there are different pros and cons. I'm not sure I would ever like it, but I can imagine. I actually like that about my speculation the best, which is I can imagine a product that is good for lots of people. Even though it's not probably a product that I would be very enthusiastic about using, because I can imagine it being something that would be usable in a way that a big touch bar would not.
Right. Yeah. It definitely has interesting questions and interesting implications, and I feel like the touch bar was their attempt at being like, let's try this. Let's see how people respond to this. And the answer is, it either didn't go far enough or it went too far.
Yeah.
But it's unclear which.
I would like to know what Apple's, because they do. I talk to people about this. They're like, well, who knows how this is? And it's like, Apple knows. Apple does research. Yeah. Like, I would imagine that Apple has a pretty good idea of how people are using the touch bar, and the next step is going to probably be informed by that. So that's the question about it. Like, are they going to take next steps with the touch bar? Are they going to walk away from the touch bar? I think a next generation touch bar that maybe has an physical escape key and then the touch bar starts. There's one that maybe has some Taptic Engine stuff going on in it, potentially has some pressure sensitivity where you could actually do some feel and then push in some modes, at least. That would be something that would be really interesting. And maybe even that kind of finger calibration idea where, you know, you set your finger down and it knows that, like, where you set your finger down. Like, if I put two fingers on it, maybe that means I'm just controlling the volume and then I slide it up and down. Like, so they can keep expanding kind of like the touch bar and how it works and make it better if that is a path they want to keep going down.
Right. Right.
Or it'll vanish and they'll be like, we don't even know what you're talking about with the touch bar.
Is that a drinking establishment? What's happening? I don't know.
In football, it's a touchdown and a touch bar.
Illegal?
You kick the field goal over the touch bar to the cross line or something. I don't even know.
Meet our new MacBook.
Yeah, that's right. It has keys. Well, one way not to have things stuck under your keys is to not have keys that move.
That's right. That'll do it nicely. Oh, goodbye compressed air.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I do that patent there, because there was a patent about this, like touchscreen replacement for keyboard. I did think to myself, well, that would be interesting on a MacBook. It would also be really interesting on an iOS device, right? To say, hey, you're already weirdos for using iOS, so now we're going to give you more touchscreen weirdos. Enjoy. And I could see them doing that too, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But I you got to think though that somewhere inside a building in Cupertino, there are UI and input device people trying this stuff
right.
out. So
right.
it'll emerge eventually.
Indeed, like a monster from the deep.
Yeah, probably. Talk about your Taptic engines. Monsters have those. They really rumble you. All right, well, that's probably enough for now, but we'll be back next week in our respective locations. I won't be in Chicago yet. Thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We really appreciate it. You keep the lights on. And literally. Unless a nor'easter knocks Dan's lights out, which
so far so good
could happen, but not yet. All right, so until next time, bye Dan,
bye Jason.